Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
By telling stories about our families, we become active keepers of family sagas, each rich with the history that makes our families and each one of us special. You know, whether we choose to chart a chain of events or catalog significant turning points, documenting our family events can help us to validate our lives. We become memory keepers, finding ways to return to places over and over again and, like a keen photographer, see each journey a little differently each time. Good morning, and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown. You know, the trail to family through story is the road we're going to take for the next 25 minutes. And piloting our course is storyteller Linda Beefield. Now, she's no slouch, folks. Linda's been rated one of the top 25 tellers in Texas, a state that takes its storytelling more seriously than the law allows. Years ago, Linda was one of 12 in a group of tellers that founded the Society for the Preservation and Perpetuation of Storytelling. She started performing at small festivals, then catapulted herself into the role of spotlight teller at venues like Space City, the Kima Boardwalk, throughout all of Scandinavia, on yachts at Niagara Falls, all of which above water, right, Linda?
That's right.
Churches and schools where she promoted interactive telling. She was also a featured telling at the Tejas Storytelling Festival. She's a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild and is someone who I think brings a heavy dose of bravura to her art. Linda, good morning and welcome. It's great getting you here. You know, we've tried to do that in the past, but here you are.
Here I am, and you wouldn't.
And you're a nervous wreck. You're just a nervous wreck.
Well, I always am, but. Yeah. Getting here is always a journey because I tend to get lost a lot because I'm telling stories out loud as I drive along.
As I tell people, I'm the one who gave Custer his directions, so I certainly understand what it's like not to find your way. But don't worry about it because I don't think anybody's listening. I think everybody's sleeping. It's Friday morning. But it's
well,
just,
wake up.
Listen, Linda, I want to talk about your experiences as really a preserver of family yarns. I wanted to get into your first story. It comes from your book, a self-published book entitled 3B, The Wit and Wisdom of Billy Bob Bissonette. Now first, tell us exactly who Billy Bob Bissonette is.
He's a hapless man. He gets himself into all sorts of situations. Physically, he's a big old bubble with a beer belly.
Gotcha. I like that alliteration. Big old bubble with a beer belly. Okay, let's hear it because this is from Pennies from Heaven.
Well, it was an auspicious night, July 21st, 1969, and there were important things happening. To my brother, J.W., the most important thing was that Neil Armstrong was going to land on the moon that very night. He had met Neil Armstrong at a small little grass strip airport, and he wanted to show Neil that people were saying howdy from Houston. So he was going to come up with a three-stage rocket. The fuel he got from his hippie chemistry teacher, I think that's where the internet began, to tell you the truth. And he had that rocket all set to go. It would have three stages. He would shoot it up just after dark, and he knew that Neil Armstrong was going to look out the porthole of the limb and see that blast. Now, in the meantime, Billy Bob Bissonette had a date. It was an unusual occurrence. He had been at the University of Houston swimming pool, and he saw the most beautiful girl in the world come out of the ladies' dressing room and sit down. He had his guitar, and his 12-string just oozed love stories like Wildwood Flower and Louie Louie. Well, he had charmed her and asked her for a date. He asked her to go to a movie and some dinner. She accepted to his great surprise, and he went home and washed and waxed his truck, and he got his mother's best Sealy Posturepedic mattress and flopped it in the bed of the truck. Now, no funny business. He was just going to back that car into the slot at the drive-in, and they were going to sit and lean up against the cab and have his favorite thing with him. He had a cooler full of Heineken and a big old bag of pork rinds, dinner and a movie. So they got all settled in that parking lot at the drive-in. Back to J.W. He had found a a really vacant lot right across the fence from the drive-in, set up his rocket, lit the fuse, but at the last second he tripped on it, knocked the whole shebang cattywampus, and there was nothing more to be done. That rocket zoomed all over that fence, and it was headed towards the drive-in movie. You might wonder why nobody noticed. Well, first of all their windows were fogged up from whatever was going on inside those cars, and second, that movie was The Guns of Navarone. So stage one fell away, and it headed straight for the snack bar. It's sort of followed the roof along, and meanwhile, Billy Bob was doing a great business with his lovely Lorraine. He said, "As their two hands met down inside that bag of pork rinds, you are the most beautiful girl in the world. I've never met anybody like you, and I think we have a future together." Here comes that rocket, losing the second stage, pretty close to the snack bar. Billy Bob, "You know, it's really a short time we've known each other, but I feel so comfortable and confident about us that I just can't see my life without you. Why, together we would be the most perfect two." That rocket had dropped to stage two, and it had caught the nose of its burgeoning blast up against the plastic roof of one of those portable paid telephones. It caught the phone, took it up in the sky, and it sort of wobbled as it carried the extra weight. Billy Bob to Lorraine, "Oh, please consider it. Please think of me as more than just a date. I want to be your steady man. I want to be your love bunny. I want you and me forever. Think, Lorraine, if we got married, we'd have the most beautiful children. We'd have the most wonderful home. And it would be just like, well, you know that old song, that Pennies from Heaven." Well, they were wrapped up in each other's eyes, and he was proposing to her once again when that rocket came soaring right over them, and that's when it exploded. It broke open the coin box, and sure enough, as Billy Bob was popping that question one more time, they were rained on by dimes and nickels and pennies. And she said yes. 35 years later, whenever she has a big gripe with him, thinks she's going to leave him cold, she goes in the bedroom, sits down on the Sealy Posturepedic mattress, pulls out a big glass jar full of dimes and pennies and nickels, $35.15, and she thinks, "Well, I won't leave him yet, because if he did it once, maybe he can do it again."
That was great. You did dialogue beautifully. Now, first of all, I want everybody to know out there that's a true story. It's a true story. We don't want people to think that we're telling folk tales, but, you know, life is stranger than fiction sometimes, and I think that these stories really do demonstrate the point. Pennies from Heaven on Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal with storyteller Linda Beefield and me, your host, Hank Rubichek. Now this story, tell us a little bit about the story as far as how it was conceived. I mean, it has truth to it, obviously, but how do you go about making this story sound like a folktale? Is that a fair question? Like, how do you take a true story like this and make it sound like a folktale?
It's the weaving together of all elements, and I like to do that. There are some storytellers who don't, but if you take every loose end and they come together, now, it's a story that can go on because at their wedding, that's when Billy Bob and J.W. met. And so another story comes from that. I think that we, as listening audiences here in America and in Europe, we like an ending. Now, if you go to the East, to Thailand and Malaysia, they can get away with having a story that doesn't have a conclusive ending, and that's just foreign to our culture. We here want it all to shape up so that it makes sense at the end.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Well, it does make good sense because we are, you know, we're linear thinkers. We have to get from one point to another as quickly as possible.
Right.
We don't like loose ends. We like coherence. We like things that are logical. We like things that are systematic. that follow stages. And I think that's a good point. You know, I know, Linda, you and I were talking about times when it's really a good idea to tell stories to our loved ones. And I just want to talk about that for about 30 seconds, if we could, because, you know, we get to the age now where we experience losses. We go to weddings, we go to occasions, and we hear stories, rich stories from people who surround us. And I know you know what I'm talking about. And I find that to be amazing. At what point do you think it's a good idea for us to say to a loved one, look, I've got a story about you or for you that you need to hear?
It's a very sensitive thing, that's for sure. And the occasion might be a story that stretches from the time you're a child. You've been hearing some of the details of this because they're family, long-distant myths and legends that perhaps go back generations. And it's permeated into your existence and all. It's something that you and the whole family share. Someone long ago, since my family came from England, someone said, we're all cousins to the Queen. And it stuck. And there will be people who will say, yes, that's true, you are. And then people who actually do the genealogy and share that with everyone. You see that on a television program last year. It's, who do you think you are? And they had celebrities who had genealogists help them. And most of the time, there was a surprise, and usually it wasn't a very good one. So you also hand down the secrets and the lies and the dirty laundry.
Right. Just a few skeletons in the closet you wish to stay
always.
There. Yeah, always. Absolutely. But, you know, I appreciate you commenting on that because stories really do document. They really do validate our lives in so many ways. And, you know, we say beautiful things about the important people in our lives. And when they aren't here to enjoy them, we sometimes don't tell stories at the right time. Personal disclosure styles ignite those consequences, but I think we need to tell stories, especially good ones, funny ones, tender ones, while the protagonists, the heroes in our family, are around to enjoy them. Pennies from Heaven, validating your family through storytelling. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with my guest, storyteller Linda Beefield on KPFT's Storytime. You know, from your same book, your next story is 3B Beans. And I'm going to sort of control myself and not ask what that means because I'm sure there's a story in that. So let's go ahead and hear this one.
Every year, my family has a reunion at a cabin up near Brownwood. It coincides with dove hunting season, but I don't want you to think that a dove was ever harmed by any of us. We would go up and bring potluck dish and sort of have it there together at the end of the trip. And on dove hunting day, we would go out and stagger around in the fields looking for doves to fly by us. Mostly, we just sat around and spun yarns and drank beer. Well, we invited my brother J.W.'s oldest and best friend, Billy Bob Bissonette, to come with us one year, and he got a galvanized bucket and a big tub of ice and beer, and he was ready to go. But he wanted to make his world-famous 3B beans, Billy Bob Bissonette beans. And there was his own special recipe. Everybody said they were gosh-awful. And if you breathed them, your nose hair would fall out. So he was having trouble packing everything up, but he did get hold of his dog. His dog, Old Blue, was a hunting dog, so he tried to tell himself. But in actual fact, Old Blue was a humongous French poodle with a glandular problem. And he did stuff like fetch, but Billy Bob had taught him to run to the refrigerator and bring him back a beer. They went up to Brownwood. Billy Bob got his water from the well, set that wood stove burning, put his beans on to soak and get ready, but he had forgotten to bring anything that made him, well, awful, hot, spicy. So he looked in the cabin and he found a 1-pound can of black pepper. And he poured that in, figuring a pound of black pepper would make them as awful as anything else. Well, they were stewing and simmering, and everybody started arriving. And my cousin, Burl, who always said dumb stuff, said, "Why are you making those beans? They stink up the place, and nobody can eat them." Well, I'll bet even that dog wouldn't eat them, pointing at Old Blue laying on the rag rug. So it was an insult and a challenge, and Billy Bob got himself a bowl, scooped some of that bean stuff in it, and it was all steaming and hot. Bubba, he said another stupid thing did Cousin Burl. He said, "Now, they're too hot for that dog." He meant hot from the pepper, but Billy Bob thought he meant hot from the stove, and he said, "You're right." So he got a big ice-cold Lone Star beer, poured it over the top of those beans. That cooled them down and gave a nice foamy head on top. He put it in front of Old Blue, and they watched as he slurped up that whole bowl. Cousin Burl, stupid thing number three. Betty won't eat another bowl of them. Well, five bowls of beans and beer did that dog consume, and none of these fools had even bothered to notice the poor thing hadn't yet belched. Well, everybody kind of went to bed, got a few hours sleep, and it was Dove Day the next day, and off we went, led by Old Blue. Old Blue stopped, conveyed himself like a regular hunting dog. Billy Bob said, "Hey, look at Old Blue." And then that poor dog let this noise out of his belly like the shot of a gun. Well, it sounded like boom. And this gray, green, greasy cloud came floating up over his head. The doves, who got rushed out of their bushes, came flying through that green cloud, and bam, they dropped dead at Billy Bob's feet. They just followed Blue all around the field, and it was like this. It was boom, doves dead. Billy Bob picked one up. He shook it. All the feathers fell out. It was char-grilled, it was smoky-cooked, and they had a feast that day of doves. Well, Billy Bob said the first plate ought to go to Old Blue, but they couldn't find him. He wasn't anywhere around, and neither was Billy Bob's truck. So if you're driving the highways and byways of Texas and you pull up next to a fuzzy face looking fella with a John Deere cap and a pair of Ace coveralls on, you know you've discovered Old Blue. And if you're feeling thirsty, just yell, "Fetch!"
Yay, all right. Did you say dovening? Did you say dovening, dovening day?
No, Dove Day.
Oh, Dove Day. Is that a holiday where you come from, Dove Day?
It's the first season of dove hunting.
Okay.
I'll have to warn you, they have a first day of shooting season for almost anything you can imagine.
Oh, brother.
So it's never really too safe out there.
Okay, but a Dove Day.
Dove Day.
Yeah. Okay, so this was sort of a seed story, I guess you could say. You kind of tweeted it. Is that what you're saying? Okay. I know. Get me off the stage. I know. Keep my day job, and I should get off of this, too, because I still have no day job. All right. In the meantime, thank you so much. That was a riot. A riot. You are listening to Pennies from Heaven, validating your family through storytelling on KPFT's Storytime with teller Linda Beefield and me, Hank Rubicek. Let me just talk about our storytellers group for a moment, Linda. You know, all of you out there, you want to validate yourself as a storyteller, because believe it or not, everybody really is a natural storyteller, because everybody can tell a story or listen and enjoy them, and there's no better place to do it than the Houston Storytellers Guild's monthly story swaps. It's held on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House, right next to St. Andrew's Church at 1819 Heights Boulevard. I'm the proud president of the Guild, and I can tell you that our members are ridiculously wonderful people who have entirely too much fun. And you want to be sure to check out our site for the schedules and special events at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. Linda, there's all sorts of methods that people can use to document stories. There's journals, there's free writing, there's looking at photographs, there are just a number of things, looking at heirlooms and the like. And you were sharing with me before this program that you were putting on your mother's ring, and that ignited something. Tell us a little bit about that. We just have about a minute, but tell us what you mean by that.
My mom was a great card, which I didn't know until she was in her 80s. And she told me a lot of dirty linen stories. But one day she called me and said, there used to be 4 squirrels in my backyard. Now there's 5. I got an alien squirrel, and I'm going to get it. I said, Mom, what are you talking about? She says, I called up the Hunting Society, and I called up the Wildlife Society, and none of them will come get that squirrel. I said, well, Mom, you know, they're hard to identify. You can't just get one. They can hop from limb to limb. I don't know. Well, I went over to her house later on that day, and I walked in the front door, couldn't find her, and I heard this pop, 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 pop. And there was my tiny little 80-year-old mother with my brother's BB gun in her hand. And she was so little she couldn't even cock the mechanism to get it to fire. So she stuck her foot in it, cocked it, and she was drawing a bead on a squirrel. Well, I had to sweet talk her to get her away from that BB gun so I could hide it in an unused closet.
It's amazing how things remind us. Yeah, so you went from a ring to a BB gun that you had to hide from your mom.
It's a funny story about her, and with relatives who have gone on and can't defend themselves, I think it's fun to collect the silly stories.
Stories are like a poem laced with the rhythm and pulse that guides the listener. Family stories provide a kind of interpretation of our world, the world to which we were born, and then journey through the gateways and pathways of experiences that ultimately define us. Thank you, Linda B. Field, so much for sharing your craft with us this morning and for reminding us that our lives are the most powerful story we'll know. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing all of you a perfect weekend, asking that you keep KPFT in mind during the second week of August for our summer fun drive, and reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Tune in next month and be safe.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308.